And the court will proceed to the fifth case of the United States versus Pennington. Mr. Wilmot.
May it please the court. Thomas Wilmot on behalf of the defendant appellant Richard Pennington. There is no claim in this appeal that the sentence imposed by the district court was substantially unreasonable. This appeal is instead a claim of procedural error committed by a district court that presumed a sentence within the guideline range was the reasonable and correct sentence. The district court's comments in relevant context demonstrate it ignored the parsimony provision in Title 18, Section 3553A, in favor of the guideline range. Mr. Pennington acknowledges that a district court must consider the guideline range and may exercise its discretion to place significant weight on the guidelines and reasonably sentence within that range. But Mr. Pennington submits that's more of an answer to a substantive reasonableness challenge. And the record here instead is unclear that the district court at sentencing utilized a procedure in which it actually exercised that discretion. Rather than do an analysis that there was no meritorious reason to sentence outside the guideline range and thus reject the defendant's arguments, which is permissible, this district court thought it not worth any analysis because it wasn't worth the calculation. And it was worth the calculation for two reasons. Number one, there is no obvious dividing line by which to measure how much longer a sentence must be for the increase to constitute prejudice. And number two, the parsimony provision within the statutory sentencing scheme.
It wasn't that the judge didn't consider the factors under 3553A. He went through the factors. It's just that he did it arguably in reverse order. He was concentrating on the question about whether he would be released so that he could be placed in a situation most likely, most likely to provide him with proper care once in the custody of the Bureau of Prisons. But he had gone through many of the same considerations that you would have expected in a 3553A setting before he got to that point. So my concern is that you're placing too much emphasis on his abbreviated statements when he gets to the appropriate sentence between 4 to 8 months. It's not really fair to say he hasn't considered a number of the factors.
I think he did consider a number of factors, and the fact that he considered those factors in the context of whether there should be voluntary surrender or not,
which is no small issue for your client.
Not only that, I agree, but also I think when he considers those factors in the context of voluntary surrender, I trust that the district court was also considering those within the context of what's the appropriate sentence to impose. However, he made those comments in the important context of what I submit, Judge Connolly, is not just isolated, abbreviated, non-contextual comments about what sentence eventually to impose. What the court then said, really five statements that are troubling, that are at the point in time when the court decides to reject the defense proposal and actually impose sentence, says the defense proposal for a variance, a 50% variance from group counts 1 and 2, to be, quote, absolutely silly. And to, number one. Number two, to consider such a variance, quote, de minimis, quid quote. Number three.
Well, I mean, they're unfortunate choice of words, perhaps, but at the end of the day, that was his view as the sentencing judge, that he'd given the minimum sentence of 60 months on the one count. He'd accommodated the placement issue, which is no small factor. And at that point, for the remaining two counts, he thought that, you know, some additional penalty was required. I guess what I'm concerned is we get to the point where we're saying that the sentencing judge has to use specific magic words before we can be comfortable that he's properly assessed the factors under 3553A.
Right. But I think this record, Judge Connolly, taken as a whole, is not clear that this district judge said that it was rejecting, under 3553A, the defense proposal for a non-guideline sentence based on 3553A. I submit that I think the record taken as a whole, or at least at the very least, the record is unclear, and when unclear, this court has remanded in the past. The record is unclear whether the court presumed the guideline sentence to be presumptively reasonable rather than the correct sentence under 3553A.
But he doesn't say, and you know, to the extent we're looking for guidance from other decisions of this court or the United States Supreme Court, he doesn't say that it's presumptively reasonable. In fact, he says it's not binding on me, right, but that these are indicators. I should look to this. And I guess the strongest statement for you is that he says the guidelines are to be followed. It doesn't necessarily mean that he's saying anything more than I'm supposed to look at the guidelines, which he is. He's supposed to look to the guidelines for guidance.
Yes, sir. When he says the guidelines are not binding, which I don't think, and I know the United States Supreme Court in the Nelson case and this court in Panisse said, well, that is kind of beside the point that if a court just says that. But he did say that. They're not binding. And then I think when he says, but they are indicators to us in what line we are to find, may be consistent with the language or the holdings from this court and the Supreme Court that the guidelines are the starting point, the initial benchmark, et cetera. But then in combination, that statement with, we judges are told that the sentencing guidelines are to be followed, at the same time saying that the variance requested by the defense, which was not de minimis and was not absolutely silly because it was a 50% request for variance under guidelines one and under group counts one and two, are not to be considered and would be really a fair interpretation of.
That's where I guess I don't see in his statements that he's saying he didn't consider them. He just views it overall that any further reduction beyond giving the minimum on obviously the most consequential of the sentence was inappropriate, was silly in his mind.
Right, Judge, and I would submit to you that that can't be consistent with the parsimony provision, a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary to justify the
sentence. Does he have to use those words in order for us to bless the sentence?
I think it's absolutely clear he does not have to use those words. But I'll tell you this, both the government and the defense use those words. And while the sentencing court isn't required to use those words, it's required to do an analysis that makes this court confident that it did impose a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary to comply with the purposes of sentencing, as opposed to a presumption that a guideline sentence is to be reasonable and correct. And, you know, judges, consider this for a moment. Apparently, under this court's rationale, a sentence at the high end of the guideline range or a sentence 4 months greater than the guideline range would have also been reasonable because it still would have been just a de minimis change from the guidelines, or absolutely silly to argue for something, to tell the court it's wrong to argue for something less than 4 months over the guidelines. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal unless the court has any additional questions.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Wilmot. Scott?
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. Like Mr. Wilmoth, I think it's important to examine the procedure in this case. And I think it's unfortunate sometimes that we're seeing sentencing appeals now, and I'm not criticizing Mr. Wilmoth, but we're focusing on specific words taken out of a long sentencing commentary and then trying to ascribe specific meaning to what the district court meant by those statements. And I certainly don't know that, neither does Mr. Wilmoth, and obviously this court will have to determine that.
Case law doesn't leave defense counsel with much more to argue about.
I understand that, Your Honor. But if you look at the entire procedure that was employed by Judge Mills in this case, The first thing he determines is that no one has objections, that the guideline calculations are correct. He gives the government an opportunity to make its recommendation. The government prosecutor does so. Defense counsel then makes his recommendation. Both of them, at the time they're making their sentencing recommendations, also address the issue of the voluntary surrender. So then when it's Judge Mills' turn to take the floor, so to speak, he starts off by addressing the voluntary surrender, and he specifically explains how he has read in detail the pre-sentence report and has come to understand a lot of the circumstances surrounding Mr. Pennington, his background, his adoption as a Korean child into this American family, and all of the drug abuse problems he's had, as well as his mental health problems. And he is clearly troubled about those. He clearly has thought about them. He's thought about them not only in the context, I think, as Mr. Wilmoth would like to make it, only in the context of voluntary surrender. I think maybe he addressed the remarks at that particular time, but I don't think a judge has to say, well, I'm addressing it here, and now I mean it for this, and now I mean it for that. I mean, it's clear he considered it, and that's what this court needs to be assured of, is that the judge
I guess if you're making the argument for the defendant here, he clearly considered it when he made his initial determination as to the time of placement and in applying a 60-month maximum minimum. But he doesn't. He finds all these mitigating factors or factors for concern. He doesn't talk about any of those in the context of the only area where he has any discretion.
And that's absolutely true. I think you may have used the words that maybe earlier, that some of the choices of the words may have been unfortunate. I practiced in front of Judge Mills for a number of years. He's I won't say sharp-tongued. Maybe that's.
He's candid.
Candid. Maybe that's a good one. And Mr. Wilmoth argued that he didn't make a rejection of his argument. To me, when Judge Mills said your argument is absolutely silly, that was a rejection. Now, he may not have used the words that we would have liked, which is I've considered them, and under the parsimony provision, I think this is a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than necessary. But I think he told Mr. Wilmoth, I'm rejecting your argument. And
about his statement that we judges are told that sentences guidelines are to be followed?
There's no doubt about that. He says that. But he also says then, I know that they're not advisory. I can only divine what's in his brain.
I guess, you know, the response is he knows they're not binding, but does he know that they're not presumptively reasonable, which is a different standard.
It is a different standard. I think that phrase, his choice of words, can be just as appropriately determined to mean it's the starting point. The guidelines or the sentencing procedure says we have to start by properly calculating the guideline range and consider those guideline range. It's a fine line then into whether or not the district judge is then presuming that that sentencing range is reasonable, which he can't do, or simply using that as the starting point and then determining whether or not a sentence within that range or above that range is appropriate or below that range is appropriate.
So what would be the harm in sending it back just that we clarify whether he was starting with a presumption of reasonableness simply using an unfortunate phrase when saying that you are to follow, the courts are told to follow the guidelines?
I mean, in terms of harm, there's certainly no harm in that. You can say, when we did that.
Other than that, this court may get a bunch more such requests, and since I won't be here, I guess that's not a real harm for me.
I guess in some ways that's a policy, not a policy decision, but this court is the one that under our current review process for appeals ultimately decides whether the sentence is reasonable and whether the judge abused his discretion in imposing that reasonable sentence. So
yeah,
part of
that
is the procedural component. There's no question in this one that all the calculations were done correctly. The judge may not have said the words the way that gives the court the greatest comfort that, in fact, the judge knows that he didn't have to impose a guideline sentence. And I understand the concern. I mean, I wish maybe one way that'd be really nice, this is impossible, of course, is if you, on these kinds of cases, you have a telephone and you call up Judge Mills and you say, did you understand this? Do you want a different opportunity to do this? Because that's really, This is an odd, not odd, but an unusual argument for the government counsel.
I don't think we're going to do anything like that, but let me bring this back to the realm of reality and ask a procedural question, okay? What jumps out at me reading this record is that Mr. Wilmoth asked for a modest below-guidelines sentence, a modest variation, and Judge Mills rejected that because it was so modest. He said, four-month variance, it's not worth my time. And moved on.
The words certainly are susceptible of saying it's de minimis, meaning it's not worth my time. But I think, again, I think knowing Judge Mills, it could also just mean I'm rejecting that. It's I don't find that.
It's clear he was rejecting it. That much is very clear.
Right.
The problem is, or the question is, the issue is whether he gave the argument appropriate procedural treatment, or did he reject it simply because it was too modest a request, and whether that's a legitimate procedural basis to reject the argument.
I totally understand.
So if you could address that and defend what the judge did on that basis.
We all see that and read the same exact words, and I think either that this court can come away with either conclusion. One is that he's decided that a sentence within the guideline range was reasonable, and his choice of words when he said de minimis was unfortunate. You could also fairly conclude from this record, I grant you, that what he's saying is it wasn't worth my time. I'm not going to spend any more time addressing your argument.
Ms. Cox, let me come at it a little differently. Do you think, do you read Judge Mills' approach as 64 months is reasonable, 68 months is reasonable, but he hasn't explained why he's chosen the 68.
I mean, he did not give us a good explanation, and so that's why we're here. We're trying to divine what that was. Yes.
I appreciate that. But, I mean, is that – now, of course, I ask Mr. Wilmoth the same thing. Isn't that what he's saying? At 60, what he says de minimis, that's the way I read it. Perhaps that 64 is reasonable, 68 is reasonable. I'm choosing 68, but I haven't exactly explained – why that's more reasonable than the 64.
I certainly think that's a very reasonable conclusion for you to draw, Judge Flom, from the statement.
On the other hand, we feel the heavy breath of a district judge with us today who quite appropriately says, how much you're going to scrub these records to for those who really have the laboring oar of sentencing.
Can I go back to the harm issue?
Sure.
If I could, because, and again, I appreciate what Judge Conley was saying, is that this court doesn't just keep bouncing cases back, but and neither the government has no interest in doing that either. But the fact of the matter is if this court can't conclude, which is that this judge followed the proper procedure and have confidence in what he says to support that sentence, then quite frankly, I think you should send it back, and then Judge Mills can tell us what he meant, and take whatever wisdom that this court gives him in a remand, if it sends that, as to what it would expect from district court judges when they impose sentences. There's no harm in that, certainly.
Well, Mr. Cox, I always appreciate your appearances and your candid assessment of the trial. The only thing I might say is that as a veteran prosecutor, It also may help both district judges and courts of appeals if you see a window where perhaps a judge could use another word or two to emphasize why 68 is more reasonable than a 64. You should,
since
someone with your standing, you could jump in.
I still have a little time left.
Yes.
We actually have discussed that. And as you know, having been a district court judge, maybe you weren't like that, but some district court judges, when it gets to be their turn on the floor,
I understand,
absolutely kind of don't like to be interrupted at that point. And so there's a fine line. I'm not excusing the government's conduct. I can tell you the prosecutor in this case, after the sentencing, came back into the court or came back into the office and went right to Mr. Hartzler, who was our appellate chief, and said, I think we might have a problem because Judge Mills said this. But there wasn't – I mean, at that point, it's a little late. So.
No, I appreciate it. And I'm totally sympathetic on how hard it is to break into a district judge's a dialogue, or when it isn't a dialogue, but rather a – not a diatribe, but a pronouncement of
of where this case is going to go as far as sentencing. And
your words to heart, I promise that we I don't like
no,
like
I know
doing
you
these kinds of appeals if they're unnecessary anymore.
No,
this court wants to hear them.
It's so. It's the regiment that we're in now. Yes, thank you, Mr. Cox. Mr. Wilmoth?
Thank you, Your Honor.
I don't know if jumping in would have helped much, because I think the district court, presumes sentences within the guideline range are reasonable, and we have evidence as to why. How are the 3553A factors all in Richie Pennington's favor concerning important issues about surrender and where he's going to do a sentence, but ignored for purposes of what sentence to impose? Well, the answer is because this judge considered a guideline sentence to be a reasonable sentence, presumed such, regardless of the 3553A factors.
But he did say it wasn't binding, right? So there, it does suggest a reflection, at least, by the district judge on the appropriateness of staying at the 68 level.
Right. He did say the guidelines are not binding. He did use those magic words.
So he didn't feel a mandate, did he?
And I'm not saying he felt a mandate, because this is an experienced judge
yes.
who knows that the guidelines since 2005 are not mandatory. But this judge does not know. Apparently, this record, I think, is clear that the presumption of reasonableness of a guideline sentence rests with this court, not the district court. And for that reason, I'm going to ask this court to vacate and remand and assign this case to a new judge in the interest of fairness, because there comes a point in time when a procedural issue or the line between what is a procedural error becomes a substantive issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wilmoth. Thank you, Mr. Cox. The case is taken under advisement.